Hi, it's Tyler from the Awkward Phase, and you're listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm in Florida, but don't be jealous. Come visit me. Time to get embarrassed with us.
Is it May?
It was going to be May, and now it is May.
May.
How long can this go on for?
Forever. Lost and Rewound here on Radio Free Brooklyn every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And my name is Alon.
My name is Jimmy.
We have a guest.
I'm Ryan Parker.
That's Ryan Parker. Hello. And if you want to hear him play some Muzak, have to be very careful the way you over.
Well, Muzak is what they play in elevators. Right?
No, I hopefully
the
don't
opposite
do that.
Of Muzak provided by Ryan Parker for Make Music Day on June 20th in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Make Music
and
New York.
In New York City, all over New York City.
Brook the Lawn,
and Manhattan.
Yeah. Brook Lawn, is that what it's actually called?
It's all over the.
But it's in Manhattan.
Yes,
it's actually all over the boroughs, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So if you all want to see Ryan Parker playing the music, you can find him in... Where did you say you're going to be? In Park Slope
and
Harlem?
I'm definitely going to be... Probably, yeah. But I'm most definitely booked for South Slope. I want to say, hold on, 5th Avenue and... Oh, that must be 15th Street, I think, somewhere around there. But if you just look up my name, Ryan Parker, it's going to be fun. We're going to have lots of different of my musical colleagues swinging by.
Yeah.
It's going to be a mixture of like jazz, R&B, folk, all sorts of stuff.
Thanks so much for being back here, man.
Yes.
It's so good to have you.
Yes.
This is our 50th episode on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Good old 50.
The big 5-0 for RFB, and we may have a surprise call, but...
From the Rogues Gallery?
Yeah,
from the Lost Around Rogues Gallery.
Precisely. But unfortunately, we were supposed to have Matt Finch. Matt Finch will be back on the show again soon, but we do have Ryan here, and he's got tapes.
He's got tapes.
Jimmy, you've got a little audio as well.
I got audio.
We've got some audio from myself, but I want to save that for later. We've got quite a bit going on for this show, and again... Donate to us if you want to hear us with financial stability going on into the next season. Season 5 is about to begin soon enough in a few weeks. So
yeah, just like the last season of The Wire, season 5 is going to be epic. It's going to be epic.
RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/LAR to sponsor our show specifically and to the community as a whole. RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge where you can donate any amount of money you wish to donate in order to give Radio Free Brooklyn the monies that it requires to be
functioning in this world.
Yes.
You can also send all your submissions to be on the show if you want to be a guest on our program and you've got old tapes. Again, email them to lostandrewound@gmail.com.
So let's begin with our first clip in just a little bit. A little Casio now. And then after the little Casio, we go and listen to some clips.
Is that Jazzy Alon right there?
It's Jazzy
Alon. Hey, man, we going to listen to a little Casio. We going to listen to some clips, baby. It's going to be a great old time. Right down here. Lost in Rewound. Radio Free Brooklyn.
Okay, take a break for 1 second.
That
worked out surprisingly.
Handing me as we speak, a tape.
And the keys says, to the city.
Failure.
Falter.
Falter, like I said, the
failure.
Band.
Failure.
Failure,
the
not,
band.
No, not, yeah, exactly. Stuck on you. Ken Andrews, failure, right?
I have no idea.
I saw them once. They were really good.
Oh, all right.
Well, did
or
they...
Or at least Ken Andrews.
If, that's if they name. Didn't meet your expectations, I feel like... Back, eh?
Falter would have exceeded my expectations because, for those who remember when Ryan Parker was on the show, he played music from his band from when he was in middle school, and the band of which he had in middle school sounded almost appropriately more like a college band because of the talent, the sheer talent that you had.
Did you have a beard back then, too?
No, not yet. Not
so
yet.
You didn't have the sheer facial hair.
I didn't have the facial hair, but I could put on a faux Eddie Vedder deep voice. Rrr. Brr.
I don't know. Good. I don't know anything about faux deep
voices. Shall I talk about the?
What you got to do?
All right. So we got. so this was a refresher course for those who didn't listen to the episode on which I was featured. I started playing very young, and in middle school, I had two buddies, and we started this rock band, and recorded tons of stuff on cassette. Went to a recording studio. Cassette I'm handing over is a evolution of some of the stuff that we heard in my other episode. This is one of the later recordings, right before the band broke up. And this is actually freshman year of high school. But the twist is we were such jerks that we started our set. We hadn't played in a while and people hadn't seen us in a while. And we started our set on different instruments. Everybody was playing something they shouldn't have been. So we had the drummer playing the bass, we had the bassist playing guitar, and I was playing the drums, and it's totally ridiculous. And you will hear also the very unsatisfied high school audience of friends who were like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Well, let's take a listen then.
Okay, I'm going to start. One.
Falter sucks.
Left me!
What the hell's the torment?
That's that indie cheese.
That's that freshman year
artsy
hardcore.
Walter Sub!
Yes. Isn't it great? Oh, man.
Okay, so that's middle school again, right?
No, that's freshman year.
That's freshman year.
Wait, in fact, I have the date and time here.
Ooh,
this is
even better.
June 23rd, 1995 at 8:20 p.m.
8:20 p.m., so you were You were the opening for a band for another band.
It was
sounds like an opening band.
It does. But you know, this was a it was a basement show at our friend's place, which was sort of like the legendary basement punk rock quote unquote venue. We didn't sort of have like headliners. It was just like, this band goes on at this time, this band goes on at that time. It doesn't really matter. But as you could hear, they were expecting us to play the way we ended up playying, which was some like artsy, hardcore, indie rock.
We got experimental, and they just weren't prepared.
But we played a joke on them and got on all these instruments that we couldn't play very well that we had been fucking around in rehearsal.
So you were playing
drums.
You were playing...
Which you now play. But at the time,
it was, I just started playing the drums, and it was really just in rehearsals,
right?
And like on downtime, right?
It sounded
so in the band. I was normally the lead guitarist, and I was a pretty decent guitarist by that time, by whatever indie rock kid standards. You know, I was always the lead singer guitarist in the band. So when we got up and started our set after having, you know, rocking hard throughout middle school. And I went behind the drums, and the drummer was playing the bass, and the bassist was playing the guitar.
Did everybody like think something magical was going to happen, and then it's like totally terrible?
I don't think so. I think they knew us, so they were like, "Oh God, what are these guys doing?"
Okay. It would have been great. You're like,
they
yeah.
were like, "Oh,
all
boy.
Summer long, guys. You thought we were just hanging out, but we mastered each other's instruments, and now we're going to play our songs backwards."
I wonder if after this moment, okay, so you learned to play drums, and obviously you were definitely interested in learning how to play drums already, but did the other band members become more proficient in their non-instruments as well?
Yeah, totally.
So that you could get away with doing this, and it actually was like, oh shit, they really do know how to play.
Eventually, yeah. I mean, you could hear
there was some sense of musicality.
Sure,
it,
yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I'm swinging. It's a shaky rock swing.
If you want to know what it sounded like to me,
it sounded
like when they have a movie and someone is coming out of like a coma and rock music is playing.
there you go.
Or if they're coming out from being underwater, rock music is playing. Yeah. It's got that like distortion of the underwater.
Yeah, well, and I think we played it up a little bit too. Obviously, I mean, you can hear the bassist going wow, wow, like he's deliberately really playing really dirty and sloppy. It was, you know, it was a joke. The song, too, and you can't, of course, hear it because that is, like, the most horrible lo-fi recording. I've got worse, but that's some pretty bad stuff. But the song was a song by the first drummer of Pavement, who went out after getting kicked out of Pavement for being an alcoholic and unreliable. He recorded an album, and he had this goofy song called Plant Man, and the only lyrics and so metal, what the melody goes like this: it's just the plant man knows that the plants will grow, the plant man knows where the plants will grow, he's the plant man, da, 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 da. And so, like, it was just so absurd, and everybody knew by that time that our actual Falter songs were getting kind of, like, serious and artsy, and we were becoming much more proficient as musicians. We were, like, playing in 6 and 5 and doing more, like, funky jazz and funk stuff incorporated in the rock. So it was a goofy little trick we played on our friends, and you could hear they were slightly amused but also annoyed. We wasted, you know, 10 minutes of our set, or maybe a little less, like, just, like, setting up on the incorrect instruments, playing a goofy song about a plant man.
I kind of wish that all of his songs when he left Pavement for being kicked out for being drunk were just about being drunk in places and getting kicked out.
That would be, you think you changed my life? Cool.
No, you set me up, and now I'm like the messiah of drunk people.
Yeah, right?
I just go across the lands, and people follow me like my drunken collective.
But I like – so the reason I chose that recording is because it shows that kind of it shows a little bit more of our personalities, too. We're yelling at each other and being goofy. So that we had this – we still retained some of that goofiness from the song about the 80s and the Kill Drummers Society and
– Of course.
All that stuff that we – even though we were writing more serious rock music, we wanted to retain some of the goofy silliness in our sets. So that's how we did it. And it also shows that we were how I became a multi-instrumentalist, which was this, like, we just loved playing around on each other's instruments when we weren't actually seriously working on the music. And then that evolved into the drummer actually becoming a decent bassist and even decent amateur guitarist. And the bassist eventually could play guitar pretty well, good enough for rock and roll.
Would you say that you enjoy playing drums or guitar more now?
It's totally different. I drumming is just the most, you know, it's just fun, visceral, and I don't have to think as much intellectually. I'm sorry, drummers, but I just don't have to think as much about, you know,
gotta think about keeping beat,
chords and scales and which notes are going to work with which chord, and got to keep the form of the song. I mean, a good drummer should be able to do that stuff, but a lot of them don't. And it simplifies things to a certain extent. You're just working about beats and rhythms and how you're enhancing the arrangement of the song with percussion. I mean, viscerally and just, like, fun wise, sure, but it doesn't satisfy all my, because I did study the hunger. Because I studied music really hardcore. So yeah. I playing guitar, especially more creative guitar, where there's a little chance for improvisation or there's, like, more complex harmonies.
Maybe
you
got to get that double
on.
Bass pedal bow.
No, what I need to get is, like, an organ I can play with my feet. You know, there you go. You know how, like, organists play with their feet? I can be the drummer that, like, plays organ with his feet while he drums.
I would kill if you were able to do Organ Donor by DJ Shadow.
But just by
yourself, though.
Right. That would be pretty amazing. Yeah.
I can't do it. I can't be Razzle.
Yeah, that's wild.
I can't do two things at the same time, but you have the ability to do...
I could get there.
Be a multi-instrumentalist and single-handedly do it all at the same time.
Yeah, I see. I only want to take that so far. I really.
You'll be like the guy on the sidewalk grinder.
Sure, right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the one man band. At some point, like
if you got a monkey, he can use one instrument.
One of my closest friends, Andy Emirates, he played keyboards in an indie rock band I played with a few years ago called Parade Grounds, and we did our record release. And during the record release, I played mostly drums. But on a few other tracks, I also played piano and guitar, and all the while singing backing vocals. And Andy kept joking. He's like, "You're our show pony. You're like the little circus act that we like parade around. Like, look at our drummer. He could play a little piano. Look at our drummer. He plays a guitar too. Doesn't he sing like an angel? He's our little show pony." I don't want to take that too far.
I still can't stop making fun of you for the name of that band, man.
Which one?
Parade Grounds.
What's wrong with that?
Remember we talked about this?
Yes.
Yolanda doesn't know. Because I thought for the longest time it was Parade Grounds. And I was like, man, it's like a metal band name. Guys are not a metal band by any means.
No.
And, you know, it's just like when hashtags go wrong.
Right.
Situations like that.
Yeah. You're like, what did you say? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Whatever. I think it's a good name. It's all right. But it does. Sometimes you hear it and you're like.
Even when you just said it, I heard Playgrounds again.
Yeah. Yeah, parade.
The playgrounds. The parade. Well, like, anyways. If someone like Irish is going to be like, oh, you know what, playgrounds? Oh, like, that's parade. It. It's just, that's
it's over.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, check out our videos and recordings at paradegroundsmusic.com. You will see it is not metal or Irish religious
and it
music.
Is not spelled P-R-E-Y.
No.
Jimmy, let's get into your stuff.
Yes, please.
It's been a while since we've heard any of your input put in general.
Whoa. Yes.
Yep. Okay. All right. But we have to disclose this because these are actually available to be seen online.
Yes, you can watch.
But they are so goddamn old that who's gonna? I mean, if anyone is gonna be listening to this, assuming that they do go to Jim Jammer 717,
my college YouTube still up.
Yes.
Thank you, YouTube, for holding that thing up over all these years. Uh-huh. It's over. It's 11 years ago that I did. I want to say. Both of the things we're going to listen to, right?
I think
they're both 11 years old from my freshman year of college.
Yes.
One of
them features your likeness, and another one is something cool.
One of them I just edited together, and I collected all of the sound bites, and I created a sound story, if you will, from people's interviews and stuff like that.
Listen,
one of them is me. Yeah, one of them is me.
Let's listen to the one that's you first.
Okay, let me prep this.
Uh-huh.
Because going into it with raw ears... You're gonna be like, what is going on right now? I went to film school. I'm not a filmmaker right now. But I went before they had, went to Emerson College in Boston before they had, what do you call it? Like specific majors in film. Like that started after I went there. So now they have cinematography.
Concentration.
So they didn't have that when I went. So you just took everything. And I was taking what was actually intro to film and they put you on these cameras. I want to say called Bolex. And they were like 100-year-old film cameras where you got to thread the thing and you got to edit it, you know, with the splicer cutting it up and taping it together. And you got to go to the dark room and all this. And it was fun. It was definitely a good experience. The deal is like where you make a cut and you're like, no, that's my cut. Like every so often you'll recut it because it's like such a frustration. You get to see basically the roots of film. But because of that, audio and video was not captured at the same time for years and years. So there were so many times when they would just have to dub it on later, and because we couldn't capture audio at the same time, we were before they was doing any sort of sync and stuff like that. I thought it'd be great. I said, what's a classic style of film where the sync on the sound is off?
Kurosawa.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly. Like all those, you know, over-the-top kung fu movies
kung
and stuff
fu,
like
yeah.
that. So my inspiration for this was actually the films that they based, or rather that they sampled for Wu-Tang.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually did sample Wu-Tang Clan, the films, not the raps. I sampled the films, and I used like some sound clips from that. So this is me, one of my ex-girlfriends, actually. She plays the voice of one of the characters in it. And so I did this voiceover to just kind of make the story make sense. And again, if you guys want to see the video, Jim Jammer 717 at YouTube, it'll blow your mind.
Yeah. I mean, the visuals are very important for this, but
the audio is
the audio
strength.
Is so good. It's so good. Let's do this.
Here we go.
A long time ago, in a place where Kung Fu was as normal as sliced bread, there was a young man who trained for... He had to avenge a certain murdered brother. A mature for the tiger. Shadow Bomb. Dragon Fist. Haberdashery. Lotus Blossom.
Recognize the style?
Ultimate Combo. Crane Strike. This is for you. You really think you can match the imperious forces of my Kung Fu style? Watcha. Pathetic. Were you thirsty? You wanna drink? No, Kiki. You're so beaten. Oh no! How can this be?
He trained and trained for the final battle was not in the field, but in his mind.
Wow.
Oh, yes. Sorry for the over-the-top terrible accent, but I was recalling how when you would watch those, they would actually have these terrible dubbed voiceovers.
Don't apologize. That's
that
what
were
it's like.
That were really hokey accents, like terrible Chinese accents.
Oh, my God.
So I tried to do like my worst one. And
dude.
So the story, just to fill anybody in that didn't get it.
There was a Sprite bottle involved.
Yes.
Because that's so hip-hop.
Exactly. So basically, in the beginning, there's me, and I'm training in a space, which was actually us just doing camera tests. And that was what inspired me. I was doing camera tests. I just started doing kung fu because I thought that'd be fun. And then I was like, let's do like a whole kung fu movie. And then I had like the camera test left over. And right. I was like, oh, let me just like cut that together at the end. Yeah. So at first it's me and I'm like training. And I'm remembering when my brother got killed. My brother got killed by this other kung fu master. And basically at one point he taunts her when he's beaten her. Like they're fighting, he's beating her, and he's just like, oh, you thirsty, you want a drink? Which I just remember like that classic thing of being taunted, and then he looks back and she's gone, and then he dies, and then she's drinking his drink. And then it's like her walking away, you're right, it was a sprite. And then in the end, it's like I'm supposed to be now confronted. I'm like, I find his body, right? So I'm like, whoa! And then I have to confront the other Kung Fu master. But it was me. It was in my head. I killed my own brother. And it was a chick. So it's like, yeah, it's very deep. It was very deep stuff. It wasn't. And then in the film, it's not actually Mike's girlfriend. It was a different person. It was a film student.
What was the first Kung Fu movie you ever saw?
The first Kung Fu movie I ever saw. That'd be hard to say. I want to say it would be a Jackie Chan movie. Or Bruce Lee movie. Hmm. And I want to say maybe like Rush Hour.
Probably, because
that was like a movie that we watched a lot as a kid.
Yeah. For like for a mainstream audience, though.
Yeah,
sure.
And that was big at the
time. It was.
Time.
Yeah, it was really big when I was a kid. And then I definitely remember seeing, Enter the Dragon and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And Enter the Dragon was not the one with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, though, was it?
I don't know. That's a good question. But I have seen that scene.
Yeah, there was the whole
that
thing.
That scene
with,
is intense.
It's so cool because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is like his really bad eyesight. And they're in this really dark area. And he's like trained in this dark area. And then Bruce Lee realizes the way to beat him is to like punch out the light. So these little beams of light. And he's like battling him into the light. Oh, right. Man. Kung Fu is just.
Classic.
It's just so great. It's just so great.
It's even better in that scene, too, specifically, that I was thinking of. Because I was wondering, just how much inspiration you took from scenes, especially of the Bruce Lee variety.
Right.
That scene specifically is so powerful because there's very little talking in it. It's just like two, 3 straight minutes of fighting with the sound off by a little bit, even though Kareem Abdul-Jabbar isn't speaking Japanese, but the audio, the sound effects that are going on there are pretty much the only dominant audio in that scene.
Yeah, I would say
and
that
it's beautiful.
Bruce Lee was definitely doing the kung fu for an American audience. You know, the fact that he brought in like not only an American actor but like a very famous basketball player.
Exactly. Well, because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar isn't even much of an actor. He's just a huge fucking guy.
Well, he was in Airplane of all things as well.
Right.
Yeah. So he did do like sort of like O.J. Simpson, he became a big name, and they just put him into stuff. And he wasn't an actor. And the same way Shaq was not an actor, but there's like multiple Shaq movies, you know.
Right.
So the best thing is that like, so I finally did get a chance to watch in college a lot of those old movies they based Wu-Tang on, one of which was called Mystery of Chess Boxing.
Mm.
And if you watch that, it's so Chinese. It's always in like an ancient form of China, and there's always a story that has to do with like a very classic Chinese style myth.
Right.
And the one that, and Mystery of Chess Boxing, which they have a song with the same title, they actually in that movie is the character Ghostface Killer.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Yeah, and he's not Ghostface Killer, he's the Ghost-Faced Killer.
Right.
And the Ghost-Faced Killer is the man. He's so cool, and he has this whole technique that he does, and his technique is that he he's like a bad dude. He's an evil guy. And he goes, and I believe he's like stealing land from people. And he goes to their area and he jumps straight up in the air and like lands on their shoulders. And then it goes, bum, 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 which they do in Wu-Tang all the time. And like, it's just, he snaps their neck with his ankles. Just, wow. And then he just drops to the ground and they're dead. And it was like, I could see why a rapper was like, I'm going to be that guy.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to like come up with my own rap name. I'm just going to be that guy.
And he's got a goofy sound effect that I could use.
They use these really over-the-top costumes in those things, too. And there's a whole kung fu school and stuff like that that, you know, Jackie Chan went to. And Jet Li, apparently, I think they were in the same kung fu school, was a big deal. And but in these movies, they would wear this over-the-top, like, eyebrows and mustaches and long beards. And that's, like, a signature of these films. And they'd be wearing, like, the classic garb. But somehow Ghostface Killer was the only one that didn't look ridiculous. Like, his mustache looked actually decent. And it was, like, it was gray rather than being over-the-top, white.
Oh, God. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that reminds me of one of the great shout out to the Being a Dork Mystery Science Theater episodes. I don't know if you guys know what Mystery Science Theater is, listeners. I'm sure these two do.
I'm sure most of our listeners.
Okay. I'm getting a Netflix account just so that I could watch
the new one.
There's the new one.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
Dude. But anyways, there's this one. I think it's on Hulu. Yeah, it's definitely on Hulu. You can check this out on Hulu. There's an episode of Mystery Science Theater where they do a really bad kung fu movie called Castle of Fu Manchu.
Ooh.
And it's so racist. They have like white people playing the Asians, but they're obviously like trying to model their acting off of those Chinese kung fu movies. And oh boy, is it special. I highly recommend it if you like
that kind of thing. I just looked up a picture of the Ghostface Killer to show you that he doesn't look that ridiculous, and he looks so ridiculous.
Well, but everything's relative, right? That's not that ridiculous compared to some of the stuff we've seen.
Yeah.
And the stuff in this, like I said, Mystery Science Theater, Castle Fu Manchu,
prosthetic
totally
eyebrows
ridiculous.
Is so great, I feel.
Everything about the Ghostface Killer's face is in lockstep with how it should look, except then he's got a brown mustache. He's got a brown mustache and very silver hair. It would be like Christopher Lee, but with a dark brown mustache.
Yeah.
It just would not make any sense.
No, it's definitely like, it's obscure.
It doesn't.
He's got the evil classic laughing face. I will destroy you, my kung fu.
Well, Jimmy, I think you did a great job lambasting and satirizing, but also paying tribute to the wonderful form of kung fu voiceover.
Thank you. Thank you. I guess for me, as like a person that likes doing voiceover and stuff like that now, I guess the only question I have for you guys is, could you distinctively tell when you were listening that I was doing two different characters? in that?
Yeah.
Or did it sound? Because I had the character that was me had a much deeper voice.
For sure. Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy who was the other guy that killed my, my brother. And, oh, no, hey, my brother's voice.
I'd like to take it a step further and say that I could have probably gotten three different or four different characters from there. It was hard for me to tell when I, at least the first time I heard it and was watching it, I guess, that there was actually more than two characters. It just seemed like there was all these voices. And he was having like these flashbacks. Mm-hmm. You'll never be good. You'll never be good. You'll never
fair
be good
enough.
Either.
Well,
enough.
I, you know what? I noticed on the YouTube account that Jimmy Jammer 717, what is it, Jim Jammer?
Jim Jammer,
Jim Jammer 717 only has three subscribers, so I would urge our loyal audience
to
subscribe and check
and watch,
out.
And watch 8, 9-year-old, if not 11-year-old Jim Jammer.
There's four films on it. Two we will never be able to use for this show because two of them
use copyright.
No, one is just a music video, so it would be pointless to play the song. Right.
But when we come back from the break,
we've got another one that is a documentary that I did about Andy Warhol, and I will preface this by saying that when I went to film school, I would get assigned essays,
right,
and I would come into my teacher and premise and go, "Hey, can I just do a movie instead?" And they'd be like, "That's like more work." And I'd be like, "Yeah, that's what you think." So we're going to listen to a little bit of that.
Boston Rewound, Radio Free Brooklyn. Before, we are diving right back into another one of the Jimmy Jammer Slammer Panorama.
Jim Jammer 717.
Mammer.
Check it out on YouTube.
But this is a mini doc that you produced and directed called Andy Warhol Consumerism.
Yes. So this is a documentary technique that I invented in school called my documentary essays, where I would use people's common knowledge about a topic I was supposed to be writing about. And I would weave the web from that. And I would say, well, this isn't what's really the story, but this is what everybody feels is the knowledge. This is what the general accepted knowledge of what this is. So if I didn't go to like an essay or read this out of a book, I've asked everyone around me, like in the olden days, this is what I would get. And teachers were always really into it. And to me, it was like the easiest thing in the world. Because
right.
I just run and gun, shoot all my friends, ask them a bunch of questions, and then see what I got out of it. And they used to turn out pretty decent. So let's take a listen.
Because I need you to remind me I know who Andy Warhol is.
I know who Andy Warhol is.
No,
Name one famous painting.
Come on! Oh, that's embarrassing. Yikes. You want to know the deal with Andy Warhol? You want to know why he's such hot shit? I'll tell you. Two words.
I know that he was an artist.
He was a painter.
I know that Andy Warhol pissed on bronze and they put it in the motherfucking MFA. What the fuck?
It's kind of a piece of crap, I think.
And he was kick-ass dude.
I know Andy Warhol was quite possibly the most creative artistic genius of kind of like the mid-50s to late 60s.
Great hair.
I know that he has really wild, white, bleached hair.
Every famous person needs great hair, right? And Andy Warhol started off the movement.
And he also made a lot of pop art. That was actually rather commercially successful while he was still alive. Oh, and I remember he had this thing called The Factory.
There was that whole factory thing, and apparently he would, like, hire workers to make art for him.
Like assembly line style.
He just had something about his coif that was just perfect. It was almost engineered to be famous person's hair. Think about it.
Dorso.
Donald Trump.
Nike.
Frank Zappa.
Old Navy stands out.
John Lennon.
Volcom Stone. I don't know why.
Cher.
Twinkies. 100%.
Great hair.
Campbell soup.
That's what makes a great artist, is his hair.
He was, everything taken up about the art world, like, collapsed together. He wanted to destroy the genre, and he did in some sense. I mean, he completely changed everything we define visual art as.
I mean, I don't know, I feel like art is an integral part of our culture.
Art is about constantly reinventing.
I feel that art is culture.
And redefining.
Culture is based on art.
When society's down, art's down. When society's angry, art's angry.
And it gets a little crazier than that.
A very large amount of Andy Warhol work is in this museum at Gap Incorporated that's private. You can't go there. He made a lot of short films that were kind of kinky sexually from people like Edie Sedgwick, who later shot him.
Like Andy Warhol's Marilyn Monroe, he reproduced her image multiple times. It's like a symbol of mass production and consumerism.
But I think that America really has turned into a consumer, you know, selling country.
I think brand labels become staples of the culture.
Otherwise, people wouldn't spend so much money on clothing. I think it's a way to represent yourself.
A brand name is what is displayed on one's clothing, and that initially, when you first see someone, that represents kind of who they are.
They've lost the sense, America really has lost the sense, of quality versus product. It really is, I mean, you hear it a lot, but it really is a true statement that art influences life and life influences art. Every great, you know, social movement just happens to coincide with great art movements.
Bravo, bravo.
Yeah, I even put on the clap your hands song so that people would know when to applaud.
There you go.
Perfect.
Clever.
Yes.
So that,
yes.
You got to, like, pass that off as an essay? Oh, man.
I did that a few times.
You are a swindler.
The one
that I am impressed.
I have to find it. It's on one of my drives somewhere. I never uploaded this. But the one that's even better than that is where I did one that I had to do about something historical in Boston. And I did it on the Longfellow Bridge.
Right, the Longfellow Bridge. You were talking about that.
Yeah. And
last time you were here, I think, no?
Did I mention that? But the best thing about that is it was all misinformation. There was this one at least had some semblance of history, and right. There was a message somewhere, right. And you're getting something out of it. The other one was just
completely
jokes,
wrong.
And people were like, "Yes, Longfellow, you know, they said it because he had a single long nipple hair." And I turned that in and got a grade on that. Wow. So, wow. Never mind the amount of effort necessary to do a film. I guess it was communication school. I don't know.
Sure, yeah, Emerson, yeah.
I took one science class, and there were no math classes in the school.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like Emerson.
Humanities and sciences. That was the same thing. I don't think I ever took a math class at college. I was very lucky.
Well, that's pretty standard, I think.
I was very lucky.
Well, if you go to, like, any sort of normal, not arty college, like not communications college, you're getting hammered with math.
No, you were talking, like, in a liberal arts, because I went to a liberal arts program, and, yeah, you had to do, like, distribution credits. It wasn't a lot of classes, though. And it was, you could choose, like, math or science. And a lot of the classes were, like, kind of a joke.
Well, the math classes, I feel like most people take in college is, like, stat. Everyone takes statistics.
Right? Well, right. But that's actually functional. That's, like, social statistics for social sciences, right? Or statistics for whatever, political science or something. That's actually useful.
I still remember when I was in high school, I, like, you know, in New York you have the Regents exams and stuff. And I took the Regents and finished it in junior year. And they put me in math in senior year. And I was like, did I fulfill my math requirement for, like, graduation?
Right.
And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, why am I in a math class?
Why did I stop doing this?
Yeah, it's like they were like, because you want to be prepared for college. And I was like, I'm not going to do anything with math, though. Silly. I'm not going to be an engineer.
Silly.
Not going to be a scientist.
Instead, you engineered some goofy documentary and got college credit for it.
Yeah, they switched me from that math class into photography class.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And I was like, yo, put me in advanced photography. Skip me out of that intro. And they were like, why? And I was like, because I'm a G.
Yeah, you got to make education your own. You got to be your own advocate. That's good.
You know what's funny, though? I did that, and they put me in the advanced one, and it was because I knew the professor, and I knew how to do photography to a degree, so I just wanted the more advanced techniques. But then they came to me, and they were like, I remember in school, they were like, you're Hispanic, right? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, you speak Spanish? And I was like, nope. Like, we're going to put you in Spanish 3. And I was like, what? I'm going to fail.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, but you're Spanish. And I was like, this is probably the most racist way to fail a kid out of anything. And I didn't fail it because I never failed a class growing up.
Wow.
But what instead I did is I got like just passing. So they wanted to put me in Spanish 5. And I was like, no, I just pulled that out of my ass. I don't know how I made it. You got to put me in Spanish 1. And there was all this like, you know, bureaucracy stuff I had to go through to go back and then take Spanish 3 a second time. And it was like,
whoa. Yeah,
it was nuts.
I luckily didn't ever have to worry about taking a class in college twice. But because my freshman year was such a disaster, they gave me like a whole lot of options as to how to make up for the credits that I didn't otherwise get
right.
in my first semester. So like they, instead of taking an essay class that I was supposed to have passed, I ended up taking academic writing. And incidentally, that was a blessing in disguise because they gave me the opportunity in this class to do like a persuasive argument and do like some investigative journalism back home. And I learned a lot about the Grand Union's demise and why a CVS pharmacy took over the only grocery store in town. So that was kind of cool. Overall, I would say that I didn't get those passes, and if I had to take a class, it was in most cases going forward is because I did not fulfill requirements, and I just needed to do anything I could to fulfill like a language requirement, for example, or fulfill this writing requirement. I felt like I was always trying to find loopholes, really.
Yeah,
freshman year was the hardest year of college for me.
Easily for me.
For sure. I mean, for one, there's just the adjustment period to, like, I'm an adult now, and I got to feed myself, and yada yada, you know. And I'm not living in the same city and stuff. But the classes were core classes, and all those core classes involved more grunt work in my mind. You know, banging it out when I was doing stuff, you know, later on in school, it cost me money, for one. Like, we had projects where they were like, this project will cost you $1,000.
Whoa.
You have to know that going in. If you don't spend that money, you'll fail.
Whoa.
And it was because it was like film school, and they can't provide everything for you. They can provide you the cameras, but you got to pay for the film, and you got to pay for the processing and stuff like that. Huh. So I feel like at that point, the pressure was a lot more of like, we can't screw up because we don't have another $1,000.
Yeah.
You're
literally invested in your own education.
Yeah.
Well, and the subject is more, you know, like related to what you actually want to do.
Yeah, and then plus a lot of the stuff later on in school was like, when I did have stuff like the more difficult classes, it was like critical thinking stuff. It wasn't like, you know, do a 20-page paper. It was like, you need to find the reason for that and write a paper about it. But if you don't get the real reason, then you're not going to get the grade. Because the class that I did the best in college, which I thought was one of the hardest classes, was media criticism theory.
Mm-hmm.
We would watch the same film 10 times in class. Then you'd be assigned to go home and watch it 10 more times and stuff.
Right.
And you'd like look past the film and look deep and find all the things that were there.
Right.
But they would give you movies where their things were actually there to find. Right. Not just like, go and have fun on this wild goose chase. And then after you watch it 20 times, you find out that they were all on drugs and there were no secrets. But but they had ones where there was like every scene was something, you know, the guy was putting so much effort into all the stuff he wanted you to read into it, you know?
Yeah.
Criticism.
It's fun. It's one of those things I find an appreciation now for rewatching stuff. What I do know that the director cared a lot about.
So we have a call. We have a very, very, very special call on the air. Mystery guest, introduce yourself.
Oh, hey, this is Jay Miller. You should introduce me.
I introduce you. You only have a few minutes. Jay Miller from Impractical Jokers.
I think it's weirder for me to introduce myself.
You're currently on set, man. You have very little time to talk.
Yes, I'm currently in the middle of shooting Impractical Jokers, but of course I had to take the time out and call in to the show for your big celebration.
Yes.
Appreciate it, brother. Good to hear from you.
We're really grateful that you were able to call in at the last minute to show your love. We have even a clip that
I have to. 500 episodes. That's, you know.
It's a special achievement. This is true.
Where's the shoot that you have right now?
We're shooting in, is this live?
No,
don't worry about it.
Oh, good, because we're shooting in Washington Square Park.
You don't want anybody coming and going,
oh, my God, a practical joke is like all those guys, like the jokers themselves are going to be there?
That's cool.
It's just hanging out. It's beautiful out, and it's, it's nice. What can I say?
Well, yeah.
Hey, man, spring day time, man. It's here.
We wanted to get to a clip of yours that you sent a while back that we didn't get a chance to play the last time. We were lucky enough to have you on when we first began season 4, which is why we had you back, because we were hoping to reach out to some of our season 4 guests, and you had provided us a gobs of clips. Shall we listen to this?
I have no idea what this clip is, which is very exciting.
Okay.
All right.
What is this?
Oh, this was like one of the first times I did stand-up. And this was the girl, I think it's the girl, who went on before me. This is terrible.
I love it.
Oh, no. This is my first stand-up. This is probably... I just said go. This is really bad. And it was
what year was this?
I'm going up next. It might have been 1996.
Woo.
So this is like 20 years ago.
Wow.
And if he was serious, you guys will...
I don't know. You know what? You could probably jump into the middle somewhere.
Okay, I'm jumping to 3-minute mark. This is real. Yeah. We're not editing this out, folks. This is all the way it goes. Keep it going. We keep going.
Does that sound like me yet?
Not. Yes.
A few minutes today, I just met one of my friends outside, and he's like, "Hey Jay, heard that you turned gay." It's kind of freaking out, because I'm not gay, So I go, no, I'm not gay. I'm definitely not gay, Not to say I wouldn't let a guy come all over my face.
Oh, God.
Hi. How's it going? My dad would freak out. The only reason I'm not gay, but I'd like to do it just to freak out my dad. That would really piss him off, Just to get him back for all the things he did to me when I was a kid, Like, for Halloween, your parents would dress you up as, Smurfs and Bears and shit like that. My dad would dress me up as a Mexican and make me mow lawns.
Oh, no.
That's what I do. Excuse me, guys. My mom would freak out if I was gay. So my girlfriend, actually. You know the main difference? The difference between my mom and my girlfriend is, right? Is that I would never beat up my mom. That's wrong.
Oh, no.
Oh, cool. Right. Okay. I would never beat up my girlfriend. That's wrong. I was actually in an abusive relationship. My girlfriend always used to beat me up and just be like, "You prick, all you do is use me for sex. That's all you do." And I would say, "Hey, hey, there's no way to talk to your brother."
Oh, no.
There's much more there where that came from. Is this where was that again?
Oof.
Are you
first
okay?
Well, that's me. I'm just doing a Norm Macdonald impression. I'm just like, I don't know why I have like a Canadian accent while I'm doing it too.
Cause
I'm like,
I'm
not gay, I'm not gay. Definitely not gay.
That's so
it's also funny.
I did have a really.
It's so non-PC. It's so 90s. Like, it's a different era of talking about homosexuality.
I'm definitely not proud of it. But I do have a good joke. I do have one good joke in there, which is, what's the best thing about having sex with your sister is that when you're done, you don't have to drive her home. So that one still holds up 20 years later.
Oh, my goodness, Jay Miller, I salute you. We salute you here in the studio at Lost and Rewound.
This was a lovely drop in one of my. I'm absolutely peachy right now.
Well,
You were saying?
Well, I got to run. I got to run. Thank you, guys. Congratulations on your episode.
Thank you, sir.
Man. Have a great day.
All right.
We gotta wrap up. So that was totally, yeah, that was a totally unexpected call. I can't believe that actually happened. I must admit, like, maybe
did you just like tell him like offhand, like, hey, we're doing this show,
maybe
like,
a little bit during the show. I had been texting him being like, just call when you can, and he sent me a photo of him on the set, and I was like, I'm really sorry. I don't want to do this. I'm thinking to myself, like, if I was in that position and I had a friend who had a radio show or podcast and was asking for me to call in while I'm on set and I'm just some lowly extra, I would be so uncomfortable. I'd be like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, but he's not an extra.
He's a producer.
Oh, no, I know. Yeah, but like, it's either way. You're being busy on set.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah. But as a producer, you might get his moment away.
Yeah.
But that's like he said, it's a very successful show. I mean,
it is.
At this point, he's riding high.
Jay Miller, we salute
you. Very happy
you.
For him.
And
yeah.
Ryan
yeah.
Parker, not to be outdone in terms of success, this gentleman here in our studio right now has been full of activity, ever the workhorse in terms of
what's
music.
What's that show you got going again?
Open Hydrant. It's the last Thursday of each month. That's one of the bands I play with, Turnpike. Fourth Thursday of every month at Freddy's Bar and Back Room. And then, like we mentioned earlier, that I'll be playing at Make Music New York. I have a bunch of other smaller gigs, but we don't need to talk about those. I'm still teaching the music.
You want to learn from the multi-instrumental master, Ryan Parker.
Thanks for joining us, Ryan. Yeah, appreciate it. And Matt Finch, wherever you are, we know you'll be back. Sorry you couldn't make it. And sorry to all my listeners who were so very hoping that I would finally share my clip that I keep on teasing and teasing. And one day I'll play it for the right reasons and with the right people. It will happen. I feel like I'm waiting to unleash it like the Kraken.
Dude, unleash the Kraken.
I have like the audio Kraken, that audio Kraken, baby. I haven't made it happen yet, though, but it will happen. So, again, if you have any exciting clips to share with us, lostandrewound@gmail.com.
For your own audio Krakens, all your own beasts, you've got chained up and waiting in the briny deep. We want to hear them.
Lost and Rewound, Radio Free Brooklyn. We'll see you next week for our season 4 finale.
Take care, guys. Enjoy that May.
Damn it, Ryan.